Well, while we continue to talk with George Ure about the trends of 2015, we will also take your phone calls and questions on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. George Ure with us, of course. George, with your newsletter, Peoplenomics.com, what are you advising them right about now?
Well, at this point, we have something called the trading model, which is really an academic exercise. It's not intended to be taken as financial or investment advice. It's just sort of a reality check. But it still is indicating, it was indicating up until today's trading session, to remain on the long side of the market. We only take the reading seriously at the end of the week, because often what you'll find is a lot of traders will come in on Monday, play the market aggressively, either up or down, and then close out positions on Friday. So really, it's the end of the week number that matters most. And similarly, we also have something called the global index, because back in the old days, we used to be able to go out, you know, to the local company that we were thinking of investing in, count the number of cars in the parking lot, see if they were working a second or third shift, and then make a pretty informed decision as to whether or not to invest in them. That doesn't work anymore. It works to a certain extent, but it doesn't work like it did in the 60s and 70s. And so as a result, you almost need to begin with the global view of things, because there's only so much money in circulation at any one point. And again, the global economy seems to be almost either A, rolling over or getting set to roll over, or B, it's doing what in wave studies would be a fourth wave sideways correction before continuing on up for another couple of years to a blow off top. There's a fairly convincing case to be made that we're still in the roaring 20s part. We could still, in fact, Catherine Austin Fitz was mentioning this when she was on just before me. We could have a pretty good next year and a half or so, but where things get really dicey will be in 2016, 2017, because if we are able to muddle through this period, then life could be pretty good for a while. The one cautionary note is that 55 days from market highs is a period of extreme danger. And unless we start putting in some new highs in the stock market promptly, we have one of those periods coming up on February 19th or 20th. In 1987, the time that ran from the market peak to when the mini crash occurred was 55 days. In 1929, depending on how you want to count the calendar, because they did have Saturday trading back then, it was about 56 days. And so this period after highs, when you've come down from a high, and we're in the process of doing that, that's when things get really sketchy. So we could come down, find the Fed do some kind of a misspeak in their end of the month session, a little bit of market weakness come in, and then panic arrive around the 20th of February. But whether or not we see that, that's why wave studies are always, and charts are so interesting, because there's always two ways the thing can go, up or down, but you can kind of shade the odds based on patterns and formations that tend to repeat over history.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls here for you, George. We will pick it up by going to Westminster, California. Lisa's turn. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, George, you say that because of technology, we're going to be producing all the stuff we need with fewer and fewer people working. Why can't we take those available work hours and distribute them equitably and have everybody working like 20 hours a week for a full-time wage, which we could do since we're producing more and more stuff, rather than have it, as you predict, some people working, a lot of people out of work and angry. Is there any way we could distribute the work hours more equitably?
Sure. A very good question, Lisa. That actually happened back in the previous Depression when they had the same problem, basically. There were lots of people that used to be involved in raising livestock and draft animals. Then along came the internal combustion engine, and all of a sudden, people had to be repurposed. Well, back in the 30s, there was a government program that involved something called job sharing. And basically people took a lot less money home, but because of deflation, it was possible to scrape by. Whether or not that will happen this time remains to be seen, because the Fed is really trying to carry out its joint or dual mandate, which is to maximize growth and employment. But if that involves debasing the money supply to do it, then that will occur. So what you're talking about in terms of equal redistribution, improbable, and it used to be something that could be considered when money had relatively stable purchasing power, but we're going to likely see first deflation and then hyperinflation on the backside, just like we did in the 30s. So it'll be more on the inflationary side before we start seeing real job sharing.
Indeed. And George, as we look toward these various quarters, these financial quarters, we're in the quarter number one right now. Mm-hmm. What are companies expecting?
You know, right now, the expectations are fairly good. The expectations are that because lower energy costs and a healthy Christmas season, earnings are going to look fairly decent for the next couple of quarters anyway. The problem really will come later in the year when we'll start seeing the cumulative effect of consumer confidence numbers. The other thing that's going on right now that will tend to power the market up is something I call the discontinuity. And the discontinuity, as interest rates have been coming down almost in a straight line from July of 81, I think it was, the long-term rates coming down has meant that a company earning $1 of profit and paying it out as a dividend used to be a $20 stock, but as prevailing interest rates come down, when the interest rate comes down to 1%, and it is roughly at 1% in real terms when you put money in the bank right now, a stock paying 1% suddenly becomes worth $100. And if interest rates come down further, then the stock goes to the equivalent of $200 when the rate drops to 0.5%. The problem, the discontinuity happens when the rates go negative, and the Swiss are in the process of doing that right now. And when rates go negative, then people are really pulling in their horns, and you can have this real sudden collapse. We look at the forward numbers for, tell me if I get boring here, the Baltic Dry Index, which is a shipping number. And it's,
boring. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
It's in decline. So anyway, we tend to see commodities dropping sometimes 18 months before the stock market follows, and commodities are not doing real well right now.
Okay, next up we go to Woodbridge, Virginia. Shane's turn on Coast to Coast. Shane, you're on with George Ure. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good.
And George, I'll just say George squared. That works.
Okay.
All right. So I was wondering if you could expand maybe to the next two decades from now, instead of just talking about next year and how that's going to go. Also, I wanted to say, George, I'm a first-time caller as of 2 days ago.
Perfect.
And now I'm a third-time caller.
See, I took away that 30-day rule, and everybody loves it.
Yeah. So I just wanted to let people know that when they call, if they don't get on, like call again.
Don't give the secret away.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Forget what I just said.
Jury will disregard what you just said. Anyways, George, go ahead with your comments.
Yeah, that's a really difficult question, Shane, because we're at this technological and financial discontinuity period, and these things are characterized as the singularity by Kurzweil and others. At some point, the robotics are going to get smarter than we are. Person of Interest, the TV show, is giving us a glimpse as to where we could be even in a year or two, And already police departments have license plate readers, and they're pulling people over who have outstanding warrants, and that's all starting to automate. So how far into the future do we have to go before it becomes almost like the movie Minority Report, the Department of Pre-Crime and all the rest of it? I don't like to speculate more than about 5 years, because the great problem is that capitalism only works as long, well, as long as there is an expanding economy. And we don't have a system that works well in the deflation or in the lowered employment rate. And if you don't have work, why would government pay you? And government just can't make up money, at least under the current rules. And so when you go out, you know, 10, 20 years, what has worked in the past keeps compounding. And at some point, you either start whacking off zeros, like the Mexicans did, I think it was 93, 94, with a Nuevo Peso. They simply whacked off three zeros and started over again. Unfortunately, that's the kind of thing you run into when you project out 10, 20 years.
Can we support another 2008 type crash? Can we pull out of it?
We can pull out of it. Nicholas Kondratiev, the father really of long wave economics, told Joseph Stalin, and much to Stalin's delight in 26, that the United States would be facing a horrific depression. And Stalin was just overjoyed to hear it, you know, that capitalism was going to get its just desserts. And unfortunately, then Kondratiev continued and explained that, like always, capitalism and individual initiative will come back. And when they do, capitalism will be stronger than ever. And sure enough, for his insightful economic views, Kondratiev ended up the latter part of his life in a gulag.
Well, how did he feel about that?
You know the old saying, tell the truth and leave shortly thereafter.
East of the Rockies, Teddy, driving someplace in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes, hey, guys, first-time caller. George, thank you for allowing me to speak up.
Sure thing.
And here's my question for you. With all this global economy and the tugging of back and forth between the Eurozone and the U.S. dollar, do you think that there's going to be an eventuality where there's going to be a complete system crash and there'll have to be a new form of monetary system?
I don't think so. I think that the level of coordination between the regional central bankers is fairly good right now. Japan, for the longest time, was a holdout, and now they, too, are sort of in the fold. And so what we're seeing when we look at our global economic index is we're seeing a global picture where all the markets are in training, and we can almost make out a hidden hand not quite sending out the memo on a weekly basis saying, okay, Japan, you make up more dollars this week, or France, you bring down the franc this week. But you can see the arbitrage in the market effectively beginning to coordinate these things. I think over time, where we eventually go is a North American trading bloc. I don't like the idea of the North American Union, but I think that's a reality that's coming. I think that the Asian bloc, I think that the Euro bloc, eventually these things all will try to become a world government if the economy doesn't blow up between now and then. The problem is, of course, if it does, what's your fallback plan? And by the way, speaking of truck drivers, I would point out, Ted, that if you're driving a truck in Pennsylvania, think out 5-10 years, my friend, to the autonomous vehicle. Because Google is working that technology. Mercedes came out with a mobile living space that will take you from point to point. This is something we talked about in Peoplenomics, gosh, 6 months ago, about getting in a vehicle just like you'd get in an airplane, have chips, dips, and stop at a gas station and go in and have a meal and then take a nap all the way across the country while your car does the driving for you.
I'm not sure I would trust my car.
I'm not sure I would either, but that's the technology, George. I mean, Google is there with self-driving cars now. All we need is the self-filling part at the gas station. And you know, that's just an engineering problem, my friend.
Oh, man, I don't know.
I know, but you know, Mercedes has four seats in this vehicle, and they face one another. They don't face out on the road, and their engineers are saying right in your face, basically, if you think that driving the car is what you're going to be doing in the vehicle in 10 years, you're missing the vision.
There won't be any more DUIs, will there?
Yeah, officer, you can't give me the ticket. The car was driving.
I'm not driving.
Yeah, exactly. And how would you like to be able to, you know, get in the car in California, take a snooze and have a nice meal, a glass of wine, and end up in Del Rio, Texas, rather than go through the group at the airport and the big lines and everything else?
And how fast do you think the vehicle would go if it's all automatic?
I don't think they'll change the speed limit.
They might.
Well, maybe for the long haul stuff. You know, there's my wife and I have done a little bit of traveling around the country, and I like parts of Utah where you can go 80 miles an hour across Bonneville.
Man, one flat tire, though, and you're toast.
Well, yeah. See, that's the problem. But the technology keeps getting better.
You know what? America has a love affair with driving. I don't think I'd want to give that up.
Yeah, I know. But see, guys like you and I are throwbacks.
We're old school.
Old school, man. Absolutely. Give me tube-type preamps, ribbon microphones. Give me an overstuffed chair.
Yeah, you still have a Model T, don't you?
No, but I...
You get out and crank it. I know you get out and crank your car every day.
Yeah, right.
Let's go to Steve in St. Clair, Missouri. It's your turn, Steven. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, first-time caller.
Thanks.
I had a question. You were saying, George, you were saying about jobs going down and, you know, money going down and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you ever heard of the movie The Purge.
I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
Okay, well, in the movie, it's a new United States, new founders and everything, and they decree that once a year, from the time of 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., everybody in the United States can do whatever they want, kill whoever, do whatever. And only certain lawmakers above a certain level are exempt.
Okay.
I was wondering if you thought that would even, if that would be possible in real life to, you know, help with things. Like, I don't agree with it, but do you think that would be something that would work in real life of just once a year letting people just take all their rage out?
Well, I don't think it would work at all. 30 seconds, George, before the break.
30-second answer. My friend, you have got to figure out here. The reality of America is we monetize everything. We have monetized the prison system. We have monetized the legal system. There is too much money that would be lost from one day of lost revenue. We've got to have crime because crime is big business. Crime is profitable. We need crime.
We're coming back with final questions for George Ure the next hour. Gerald Celente, the trends expert, joins us as well. Beyond Belief, that's our television program. If you have the capability of setting up your flat screen TV to pick up the internet, it's a great way to watch Beyond Belief. It's an amazing program. And, you know, if you can put it up on the big screen, go ahead and do it. And it's free for a couple weeks. So just go to this website, beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. We're back. George, you're with us, and your final phone calls here. Always goes by quickly, George, when you're on the program.
Well, it goes by too quickly, but I have to tell you, I'm standing by for Gerald Celente. I love Gerald's work.
Oh, he's a great guy. This is an exciting show tonight. Not only do we learn things, but we can also plan things, and that's the important thing. Hey, what do you think about silver investing?
Unfortunately, because I think we're still stuck maybe for another year or two, and potentially in a deflationary environment, I think that gold and silver are sideways to down for a while more. But I think at the end of it, when government begins to inflate in a serious way to get out of financial troubles, then I think they go to the moon. I think that we'll, you know, be talking the $3,000 gold and $200 silver at that point. But it's a ways off. And so would I recommend buying it today? No.
But how about tomorrow?
Day after, maybe. But in the meantime, you know, I'm really big on what I call cash equivalents. And this gets back to that whole owning your life discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you own your life or does somebody else? And you know, it doesn't take but a few dollars to put in some plants and grow some tomatoes at home and get a few vegetables going. And, you know, that sense of autonomy, that being able to fend for yourself a little bit in a crazy world and getting lightly into prepping, you know, buy two, put one in storage and, you know, keep your stocks rotated. It just really makes sense. I can't tell you the number of people that I've talked to that have gotten into prepping and have found that some adversity comes along in life, can't work for a month, get laid off, whatever. Those stored goods that you were saving for the end of the world or a hurricane or a global whatever, they work really well when you become unemployed.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that ISIS, the terror group, the group that's fighting in Syria and Iraq, that they have $250 million for their own little war. Where did they get that?
Well, this whole thing with the, I mentioned it in passing, the global caliphate, when one looks at how the expansion of Muslim extremism has been going, it now stretches, George, from Libya on the west all the way to above India in some areas. And so it's literally a 12 time zone problem. And a lot of the money is coming from here in the West. Financial controls are very difficult. This gets back to the digital anarchy problem. You know, the FBI went after Silk Road, but there still is a dark internet. You can get anything you want online. I don't care whether it's drugs or sex or guns or revolutionaries. It's out there. I don't go looking for it, but I sure research it a modest amount. But that's the reality of today's world. We've gone so virtual, so digital, that it becomes unaccountable. And that's one of the risks of cryptocurrencies. The government, the government is, some would say, overly paranoid, but when you get to know what's really going on in that part of the world, that $250 million is enough to buy a nuke.
Sure is.
And so,
they claim they've got some kind of hidden bomb.
Well, and let's face it, Pakistan has had a nuclear program for how many years? They've promised a couple to the Saudis. And so we sit back and have to ask ourselves, you know, with a global caliphate developing that goes all the way from the Sudan north to Turkey and all the way from, you know, across the 12 time zones, how long before that group, which is making a lot of money on oil, as a group of countries that unofficially back radical groups, how long before that gets out of check? You know, it only takes one nuclear weapon detonated about 100 kilometers over Earth, technically in space, in order to put the United States back into the Dark Ages. So we do have some soft underbelly. It isn't just a digital problem. It's a launch problem. It's a resource problem. It's a disease problem. You know, we have many obstacles to making through these next 10 years.
All right, back to the phones. We go to John in Aurora, Oregon, west of the Rockies. John, you're on with George Ure. Go ahead.
Yes, about 6 months ago, I made a prediction on the floor, and everybody laughed at me and said, "Oh, you're crazy. We'll buy you lunch if it does." And I predicted that oil would drop to $45 a barrel.
You're a couple bucks away. You're almost there.
Well, they actually said if it hits the 40s, we will buy you lunch. Wow. Monday, I went to my floor supervisor and I said, "You will buy me lunch, won't you?" And he goes, "Yes, I will." Anyway, I have this theory on oil that the Saudis do not want us to build this pipeline because it will flood the United States in oil.
True.
The oil companies will have to expand their refineries. And two, another reason why oil is dropping is because the federal government needs money and they're going to raise the fuel tax. Once they raise that fuel tax, I believe oil, that gasoline will go to $5 a gallon. What do you think of that?
Jeez.
I think you're low. I think within 5 years we could be at $8, $9, $10 a gallon. But I also agree with you on your $45 prediction, and I'll go you one better. I think we could see oil spike as low as the upper 20s before we get out of this.
Wow. That's devastating.
Well, it's devastating, but this is back to the point. Now, there is one footnote about the Keystone XL pipeline. I was talking to my wife, Elaine, about it earlier. The one little footnote is that that it is very inexpensive to turn a pipeline issue into an environmental issue. If you live in Omaha and own a railroad that moves almost 1 million barrels a day on a railroad, and you contribute to a lot of political causes. So I guess the bottom line I'm getting to there is we have to be very circumspect when we become involved in causes that we are totally aware as to whether the cause is, I don't want to say the word pure, but unmanipulated from outside influences that may have something to do with dollars and not environment.
What do you think of cash, banking, and loans to individuals?
I love cash. The problem, George, is cash is being criminalized. A couple of years ago, a TV station up in Nashville did an investigative series about policing for cash. And basically, there were some police units claiming to be drug interdiction groups that were working the freeways, and out-of-state cars were being stopped, and people searched for cash. And this is going on all around the country. So if you have more than a couple of $1,000 on your person at any point, and you get stopped by a police officer, the odds go up dramatically that that's going to be confiscated, because it's assumed that a legitimate person would use a credit card for everything.
It's assumed.
I understand that, but the civil asset forfeiture laws have changed dramatically in America. Even if you have a bank receipt that the money came out of your account, whether or not you would actually ever get your money back is debatable. You can ask any attorney who's worked this kind of a case. They say, nope, cash, if you have more than, let's say, $5,000. If you have more than $5,000, maybe you're going to an auction, you're going to buy a piece of farm equipment, like it very commonly happens out here in Texas, right? Cash on the barrelhead talks. But this is kind of an exception. If you have $5,000 in a paper bag in a big city, I almost guarantee you ain't going to have that money tomorrow.
Next up, we go to Rob in Vancouver, Canada, on the international line. Rob, go ahead.
Thanks. I'm going to make this fast because I'm fighting a cold here. Just a comment on DUI with the automated cars. I think Nevada has already put forth rules of the road for automotive autonomous cars. And my understanding is you have to be sober to even when the car is actually driving itself. So there's bureaucracy for you. There was a benefits to the individual.
There's actually a bit of a relationship to aircraft in there too. even though aircraft can be automated to the point of landing themselves, Category 3 and so forth, pilots still got to be absolutely stone sober before they get to take the controls.
Ken in Utah, let's go to you, first-time caller. Go ahead, Kenny.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I heard your comment on my way home, and you were saying about kids not knowing how to build houses or do anything. I work for the school district here in Utah, and they don't teach that stuff. I've been in elementary schools. I've been in junior highs, high schools. They're taking away all the academic, the metal shop, the welding shops, the woodworking, all that.
You're right.
Why are they doing it? I mean, is it part of
the sense right there?
Why are they doing it? Are they doing it to dumb us down?
No, budget. I think. Don't you think, Ken? They're trying to save money?
Well, they're doing it wrong. I'll tell you what, the schools here where I live and work for, I see more stuff go out the door as garbage. Instead of trying to sell it and make more money for the school, the old computers,
They
throw them out. They go to the dump.
Oh, no.
Yeah. There is so much waste.
In my day, we had woodworking. We had automobile shop. We had metallurgy. We had all kinds of things. They're gone, George, I bet.
Yeah, they are. And the problem with that is that the countries which are promoting the industrial arts are the ones that are up and coming. The ones like India, if you don't happen to do stellar in math, you can still have a nice promising career putting together automobiles or building products, because the Americans don't do that anymore. There's only a few major manufacturing areas left, and even the ones up in Columbus and that, what used to be called the Rust Belt, it's come back a good bit. Even that is nowhere near what it was 20, 30 years ago.
We go next to Glenda in Lawrenceville, Georgia, on the wild card line. Hi, Glenda. Go ahead.
Hi. Great to hear all this wonderful information. Thanks for keeping us awake. my question is to George, if you could expand on the health industry, the health insurance coming in with Obamacare, it actually doesn't benefit the patient and it doesn't benefit the physician, because we've seen how they've been reprimanded for exceeding a number of tests per month, for example, and in the long-term situation, how is this going to affect us as a country?
Oh, that's a really messy one. I happen to go over some of my personal medical stuff. I'm a fairly healthy 65-year-old male. But by the time I ended up paying my Medicare and my prescription insurance, I had a pretty good paper trail. And it turns out that I pay more because I have all of the insurances than if I had just gone down to the local CVS or Walgreens and purchased my prescriptions for cash. The problem is, and again, we get into this, remember where I said we need crime, George?
Yeah.
This is the criminalization of behaviors. So it's against the law, or they're trying to make it against the law, to not have insurance. And what that basically means is it's an industry that is created, like the insurance industry and automobiles. You can't drive without having auto insurance. You can't live without having health insurance. Well, they just keep on adding these gotta have it under penalty ofs, and pretty quick we're all in that don't own your own life anymore. And see, that's the illusion. That's the part that we face a real problem with, because people are able to sit back and say, well, wait a minute, if I'm paying this many dollars a month for insurance and I'm paying this many dollars a month for Medicare and this many of it is Part D and my prescriptions come to this, how come I can buy that cheaper if I do it myself? What's the point here? And the point is, very simply, the healthcare system in this country was cobbled up in a way that maintained all of the jobs in the healthcare insurance business. And it's just how it works.
That's how it works. Let's take one or two more calls, before we run out of time. Andy is in California. Go ahead, Andy. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, great show, George. And, George, I'd like to get your comments on what I'm about to say. You've got some very well-informed people, insiders, like, for example, Comptroller General of the United States, David Walker, who said that we're on the road to economic meltdown. You've got this guy, James Rickards, who was saying, an advisor to the Pentagon and the CIA, who says we're on the way to an economic meltdown. It could happen at any time. You've got a stock market chart that's starting to look very similar to the one in 29, according to Glenn Beck, and he shows it on his video. You've got the American people who are very skeptical. They're getting the feeling that we're being played, maybe even sold out or being led down the road to destruction. You've got pessimism like I've never seen before in my 67 years. You've got FEMA camps opening up everywhere, being remodeled, billions of rounds of ammunition and state-of-the-art weapons for all the federal agencies. And you get the feeling that maybe something big is in the mill, and you've got at least 17 bubbles. Any one of them could bring about a world depression, not to mention that China is in bad shape. So I'd like to get your opinion. What do you think is really going on? Are we being played? Are we being led down the road to a big war or, let's say, a world depression?
Well, a world depression is already baked in the cake. When this thing lets loose, it's going to be horrific. We're going to have the famines. We're going to have all the bad stuff. It's going to make 1930s look like pretty good times in comparison. The problem is that thanks to the digital anarchy, unlike the 1930s, we're likely to have a major digital component to it. So we'll have more spontaneous eruption of demonstration, civil violence, and so on and so forth. About the only strategy that I've been able to think of that effectively addresses it is try to remain separated from the herd as much as you can. So that's why we're in the Texas Outback. Traffic in the big city is a pain and all the rest of it, but when it comes right down to it, there ain't nothing like open square footage and room to move. And if you haven't got friends out in the country or haven't got a vacation cabin someplace, you may be missing an opportunity to build your own escape hatch.
We're going to have to plan on it, though. George, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it. Up next, Gerald Celente with his trends for this year.